Well, good morning and welcome to today's service. I'm praying that as we explore the scriptures, we can learn from them, be challenged by them, and ultimately have our lives changed by God's word and his plan for us. Today, for a text, we're going to be looking at 1 Kings, and I'm going to be doing a little bit of a story, kind of walking through a story in the Bible and looking at four people in that story. As we think about this story, I want us to think about there's four people. Three of them behave well and are role models for us to draw from. And one of them behaves very poorly and is also a model that we can look at as how not to live our lives and follow Christ. So today we're going to be looking at the story of David passing and the transition to the next king. And the text for today, as you may guess, is 1 Kings chapter 1. And we have four characters that we're going to mainly be looking at, with probably the most famous of the characters in the story, we're going to kind of look at as a fifth character with a supporting role, and that is King David. So to create a little setting here, David is old, and old age is an interesting thing. He's 70 years old, and it's before the last time I think I shared out of the Old Testament, we were looking at some of the other people in Israel's history, and some of them were living much longer. And so if you think about Abraham, Noah, and you know some of those characters in the Old Testament, 70 years old, they were just getting started. But for King David, 70 years old was a wrap on his life. So he's old, and I'm just going to start the story by reading the first couple verses of chapter 1. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to read little excerpts. I'm going to try to walk you through the story as we do that. We'll try to keep moving. This is kind of a long passage, so and then we'll look at the different pieces of this story. Now King David was old and advanced in years, and although they covered him with clothes, he could not get warm. Therefore his servants said to him, "Let a young woman be sought for by my lord the king, and let her wait on the king and be in his service. Let her lie in your arms, and that the lord the king may be warm." So they sought for a beautiful young woman throughout all the territory of Israel and found Abishag, the Shunammite, and brought her to the king. The young woman was very beautiful and was in the service of the king and attended to him, but the king knew her not. So we're setting the setting here, and David is old, and you know, they didn't have electric blankets back then. And so they were trying to solve this problem. And it's funny, yesterday Jess was out early in the morning doing a photo session. And she came back to the house and was in the house, and she just kept saying to me, "I can't get warm. I got cold." And eventually she warmed up, but we cranked the heat up, and but it took a long time. And David was at a point where he got cold and couldn't get warm again. And this was a real problem. He wasn't comfortable. His life was not good. And so his advisors, his physicians came up with this plan. And I think it's worthwhile to note in this that there was nothing inherently wrong with this plan. At least there's nothing called out about that. It was simply a very practical thing they were doing. I also will point out it would appear that David and his advisors did make this woman part of a concubine or something of that sort. And that will become important later on in this story. But just for right now, that's where we're at. And so David, and we kind of stop there. So things to note, though. David is in a weak and feeble state. He's not even able to, get around and, do things and, all that stuff. He's not in good health. And he's probably not really engaged with what's going on around him in the way that he would have been in the past. And so he's in a vulnerable position. And his one son decides to take advantage of that. So the next section we're going to be looking at is verses 5 through 10. And I entitled this section, The Self-Crowned King. So we're going to read those verses 5 through 10. Now, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. His father had never at any time displeased him by asking, Why have you done thus and so? He was also a very handsome man and was born next to Absalom. He conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and with Abathar, the priest. And they followed Adonijah and helped him. But Zadok, the priest, and Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, and Nathan the prophet, and Shimeath, and Rei, and David's mighty men were not with Adonijah. Adonijah sacrificed sheep and oxen and fattened cows by the serpent stone, which is beside Enrogel, and invited all of his brothers and the king's son and the royal officials to Judah. But he did not invite Nathan the prophet, nor Benaiah, or the mighty men of Solomon, or Solomon his brother. Sorry, all these names. I always get myself into this with the Old Testament. But again, we're painting this story of Adonijah seeing an opportunity. And he jumps on it. He throws a party. He invites all his friends. And he parades down the street and says, I'm king. And it seems to be working. So this is all going on, and there's a couple things I want to point out that we see with Adonijah. And that is, one, the scripture says he exalted himself. And that's really interesting. And then it goes on to say, what type of person was he? And he was someone who didn't want to be held accountable. And this is like a little bit of a scary thing. I told Jess, I was like, this is a little bit about David and how he parented. And it's a warning to all of us who are fathers. How did David parent? Well, it said he never displeased him. And I will just challenge all of you fathers out here. I'm not up here preaching a parenting message. But if you never displease your children, you are going to have children that are going to end up like this. And David never displeased his son or disciplined his son, and he never called him out and held him accountable. He never said, why have you done this, or why, or thus? So a word of warning as we look at this lesson. Parents, be willing to displease your children. And thirdly, we see that he took counsel with men of questionable character. And this is in the list of men that he invited to his coronation. He invited Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and Abiathar, the priest. And I just want to point out, Joab, if we go into scriptures, and I'm not going to turn to these verses, but he was not a man after God's heart. He was very loyal in some ways to David, but it was a very self-serving type of loyalty. And he was not somebody who followed God. And he was a vengeful person and was willing to use vengeance to further his agenda and what he perceived as his king's agenda. And so that is the person that Ananiah is turning to and is bringing into his counsel. And then he avoided the counsel of men who he thought would speak out against him and tell him not to do what he wanted to do. He did not invite Nathan the prophet and the mighty men, and there's a list of other people. So thinking of the type of person he is, he was not willing to take counsel with godly men. So as we move on in this story, the story develops, and we move on to two new characters that are not new to scriptures, and those are, the characters are Bathsheba and Nathan the prophet. And one of the things that struck me as I read this, we often have this view of prophets as somebody who is prophesying about something that's going to happen in the future, and that, you know, almost a godly version of a fortune teller. And I think that is a very warped view of what prophets are. At a very basic level, if we look at Old Testament prophets, they are speakers of God's truth. And that can be speaking of something that's going to happen in the future, but more than often, it was that men who were willing to stand up for what God had commanded and the truth that was being disobeyed. And I think it's a challenge for all of us to be prophets, be willing to be men and women who are willing to stand up and speak the truth that God has given us. Again, we know that in 2 Samuel, Nathan was no stranger to doing this. He was the one who came before David and with wisdom told the story of the man with many and the poor man, and used that parable to shed light on David's sin. So if we start at verse 11. Then Nathan said to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, "Have you not heard that Ananiah, the son of Haggith, has become king, and David our Lord does not know it? Now, therefore, come, let me give you advice, that you may save your own life and the life of your son Solomon. Go in at once to David the king and say to him, 'Did you not, my lord the king, swear to your servant, saying, Solomon, your son, shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne? Why then is Ananiah king? Then, while you are still speaking with the king, I also will come after you and confirm your words.'" So, we see see the story progressing, and several things that I will point out about Nathan is he acknowledged the gravity of the situation, and he called out to Bathsheba and said, this is a life and death situation. If this continues, if this veering away from God's plan, you and your son are going to die. And he spoke that truth. And then, instead of just rashly jumping into something, he takes time to come up with a plan and to act in wisdom rather than, he didn't just run into David. He met with Bathsheba and they together came up with a plan to address the situation. And I think that's so important. So often as Christians, we speak out in truth without thinking about how to do it in a way that it is going to be heard and that is going to further God's kingdom. Moving to verse 15, so Bathsheba went to the king in his chamber. Now the king was very old, and Abishag the Shunammite was attending to him. Bathsheba bowed and paid homage to the king and said, what do you desire? And he said, what do you desire? She said to him, my lord, you swore to your servant by the Lord your God, saying, Solomon your son shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne. And now, behold, Ananiah is king, although you, my lord, the king, do not know it. He has sacrificed oxen, fattened calves, and sheep in abundance, and he has invited all the sons of the king, Abiathar the priest, and Joab the commander of the army, but Solomon your servant he has not invited. And now, my lord, the king, the eyes of all Israel are on you to tell them who shall sit on the throne of my lord, the king, after him. Otherwise, it will come to pass that when my lord, the king, sleeps with his fathers, that I and my son Solomon will be counted offenders. So, we're going to pause here, and I just want to point out the wisdom that Bathsheba has. And there's several things that she does in this. She comes into the king with humility. And she could have come into the king, her husband, and said, what's up with this? Why are you allowing this to happen? And could have, you know, called him out for it. You know, you made me this promise. Why aren't you keeping your promise? But rather, she chooses to come in with humility. She gives him honor. And then she refreshes his memory of those promises and lets him know what's happening and then reminds David of her plight. And I'm struck by this, and I think of just the wisdom that I often see in my wife. When there's something she wants me to do, she often will use this technique. And it's amazing how much more effective that is than calling, you know, coming in and being like, you know, why aren't you doing this? And, you know, being aggressive, even though it's truth. And, you know, the saying is, more bees are caught with honey than salt. And Bathsheba knew this and acted as a woman with wisdom. And again, this is not something that is our only you ladies can do. I think we all can learn from acting in this way. And we will see that it worked. So moving on in the passage, we're going to hop in verse 24. And Nathan said, my lord the king, have you said, Ananiah shall reign after me? And I should just say, I skipped a couple verses here where Nathan comes in and Bathsheba leaves, and then Nathan addresses the king. "My lord the king, have you said, 'Ananias shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne?' For he has gone down this day and sacrificed oxen, fattened calves, and sheep in abundance, and has invited all the king's sons and commanders of the army, and Abiathar the priest. And behold, they are eating and drinking before him and saying, 'Long live King Ananias!' But me, your servant, and Zadok the priest, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and your servant Solomon, he is not invited. Has this thing been brought about by my lord the king, that you have not told your servants who should sit on the throne of my lord the king after him?" So again, I want to point out just the tactician that Nathan the prophet was here. And also how he executed several biblical principles in coming before the king. He came before the king immediately after and reiterated the events that were happening to the king that Bathsheba had just shared with him. And it's important to know, and you can look at this and say, well, did, you know, were they just kind of manipulating this poor, sick old man? And no, they were executing a biblical principle of multiple witnesses coming and telling the same thing, and that there is truth in that. And so it's just important to think about, he came and spoke truth, but also thoughtfully spoke truth. And I want to also draw just the fact of he was fearless in doing this. And just like in the story of him coming before David in 2 Samuel chapter 12, he was willing to risk his life in order to come before the king and call him out. And I think as we speak truth, we need to do it with wisdom, but we also have to be willing to step out in faith regardless of the consequences. And one of the beautiful things about King David, and I said that King David is not one of the star players in this story, but he is definitely the backbone of the story, is that when David is confronted with God's truth and is called out for that, David acts on that. And so he's a man of God, and when he is confronted with truth, he does submit to God's plan. And that's something we all can learn from. And so he calls Bathsheba back in, and he responds. And reading verse 28, "Then King David answered, 'Call Bathsheba to me.' So she came in to the king's presence and stood before the king. And the king swore, saying, 'As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my soul out of every adversity, as I swore to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, saying, Solomon your son shall reign after me. He shall sit on my throne in my place. Even so will I do this day.' Then Bathsheba bowed with her face to the ground and paid homage to the king, saying, 'May my lord King David live forever.'" And I just want to point out the fact that David responded and honored God's plan for who was to be king. But then also Bathsheba, we see her continuing to have a godly response of humility. She is grateful and has humility and pays homage to the king. And then as we move on, David acts and crowns Solomon king. And The king said to them, "Take with you the servants of your lord and have Solomon my son ride on my own mule and bring him down to Gihon, and let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet there anoint him king over Israel. Then blow the trumpet and say, 'Long live King Solomon!' You shall then come up after him, and he shall come sit on my throne, for he shall be king in my place, that I have appointed him to rule over Israel and Judea." And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, answered the king, "Amen. May the Lord, the God of my lord the king, say so. As the Lord has been with my lord the king, even so may he be with Solomon, and may his throne be greater than the throne of the Lord of my lord King David." And so just David acts immediately. He kind of takes this a step farther than the party, Adonijah is throwing a party, but David does a real coronation. And I think you see the fake versus the real. And there's something that becomes much more significant when someone is saying, "I am king," versus the people around him saying, "You are king." And it just strikes me just the contrast of those two, of the two sons of David. The one is crowned, the other crowns himself. And very different end result. And the people acknowledge this, and the people respond to it. And in 49, we see the story continues, and they're still having a party for Adonijah, and we're going to go on and read. "Then all the guests of Adonijah trembled and rose, and each went his own way. And Adonijah feared Solomon, so he arose and went and took hold of the horns of the altar. Then it was told to Solomon, 'Behold, Adonijah fears King Solomon, for behold, he has laid hold of the horns of the altar, saying, Let King Solomon swear to me first that he will not put his servant to death with the sword.' And Solomon said, 'If he shows himself a worthy man, not one of his hairs shall fall to the earth. But if wickedness is found in him, he shall die.'" So we see that Adonijah's followers, they hear what's happening around them. They quickly flee the fake king. And he's afraid and runs for his life. And one of the things that strikes me with this is Solomon is not afraid to act, as we'll see in a little bit, but he also shows wisdom and is not a man of the sword like his father David, like Joab. And we see the wisdom in this. When he's asked for mercy, Solomon doesn't just give him a blanket pass. He doesn't say, "Yes, I'll spare your life." He puts a caveat on it because he knows the type of man that his brother is. And he says, "We will not harm you, but if wickedness is found in him, let him die." He gives him a second chance. And in chapter 2 of Kings, I'm not going to read the verses here, but there's a little piece of the story. David dies, and if we go back to, and David dies, and Adonijah goes to Bathsheba, and he makes a request. And it seems like a strange request, but it's not as strange as you would think. He makes a request to Bathsheba, and he says, "Would go to your son and ask if I can take Abishag as my wife." And that's the request. So Bathsheba goes to Solomon and makes this request. Now you have to understand a little bit about what's going on here. And a little background, the world around the countries around them. It would be the practice when a king took over or from another king that he would take and acquire all of that king's wives and his harem. And Ananjaya is manipulating his way or trying to manipulate his way into being viewed as the king of Israel by taking a woman who would have been as his wife, who would have been associated with his father, King David. And as weird and warped as that seems, that's what's going on. He's trying to reestablish himself as the king of Israel and potentially take over the throne now that his father's dead. And Solomon wants no part of it and sends his army captain over. He's upset and angry and follows up on his word that if wickedness is found in him, he shall die. And he puts his brother to death, his half-brother to death. And I think it shows the character of Solomon. Solomon was somebody who was wise and did not rashly go about killing people and taking vengeance. But he also was a man who was willing to follow through on his word and get rid of people who were trying to destroy the kingdom. And it's a reminder to all of us that, and there's multiple examples of Solomon doing this, showing mercy to people, and then also being willing to root out wickedness and people who were usurping his authority. And Solomon had a lot of faults, but especially at this point in his life, we know that he was someone who valued being a godly person. And I'm struck by the verse in chapter 3 that says, "And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statues of his forefathers David." And that's the Solomon that we see in this picture. So, in closing, what can we learn from this story? And again, I'm not really going to look at David, but the four people that I'm going to look at is very briefly, Nathan the prophet was a speaker of truth and a caller out of sin. He spoke truth and he called out sin, regardless of the consequences to himself. Bathsheba uses wisdom to further God's kingdom. And we see that in the way that she was willing to come with humility and have a plan and then execute that. And we see it with just the way she conducts herself, both, you know, before and after going to speak with David. And then the two sons, we see Ananjaya pursuing his own selfish interests based on the world's standards and not God's will. And then we see him as a man who does not learn. He does not learn from, you know, the failure of him trying to take over the kingdom. And he tries to do it again. And ultimately, it cost him his life. And then we see Solomon, a follower of God's plan, a seeker of wisdom, and is willing to act and root out wickedness when necessary. And my prayer for all of us is that we can be people who exhibit the characteristics of Nathan, Bathsheba, and Solomon, and be people who do not pursue our own self-interest and base our lives on the world standards, and rather are speakers of truth. Thank you for your time, and I'll let Dave come up and have a closing prayer.